welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. This is another in our series on AI and coaching. So I'm joined again by Kareem Hirani, who is the learning architect for Coaches Rising. He's going to join me in an interviewing capacity. Today's guest is Professor Nikki Tablanche. He is an associate professor in leadership coaching, research methodology, and information system at the University of Stellenbosch Business School. He's also the founder of Coach Vici, which is an AI coach. He's doing a lot of research on the application of AI in coaching, which we'll get right into today. And so in today's conversation, we're going to get into Nikki's vision for the use of AI in coaching. I think it's really beautiful, his view for how it can democratize coaching. We're going to talk about the potential uses for AI in coaching, and he has four really useful distinctions on how we can think about its application. We're going to get into the concerns that he has about its application and implementation, and how we can really begin to think about that in a way that can fine-tune and level up the development of AI coaching. And of course, we'll get to that question that a lot of us want to ask: will it replace human coaches? I really appreciated being with Nikki. He stretched my thinking, and he was just willing to play around with us in some quite difficult, challenging questions. Let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Nikki Tablanche. Before we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey. So I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So here we are again. Nikki, I'm really excited to be with you today. I'll just say Kareem is joining us again from Coaches Rising. How are you doing, Kareem?
Yeah, I'm well. Looking forward to it.
Great. And Nikki Tablanche, you're joining us too. And it's the first time we have you on the podcast. And this is part of the AI and coaching series. How do we find you today?
Yeah, great. Great. Thank you. Great to be speaking to you about something that I'm passionate about.
Maybe actually you could, to begin with, just give us a brief sense of who you are and what you're up to in the world and your connection to AI and coaching as well.
Sure, yes. I started out as an electronic and software engineer. So I did a master's degree in that many years ago, specializing in artificial intelligence. So my area of specialization was speech recognition. So this is the late 90s, where we didn't even call it AI. It wasn't in vogue to call it AI back then. So I spent 18 years in software engineering, and then I discovered coaching, psychology really, and I did another master's in coaching and then a PhD in leadership coaching. So I really found my passion in research. And at the moment, I'm a full-time academic at Stellenbosch University at the business school, at the head of the leadership coaching department. And I thought I was done with IT and tech, because I discovered people in psychology, right? And then I realized I can't shake off my passion for technology and found a way to combine the two. So now I'm bringing in my knowledge and expertise of AI and my knowledge of coaching. And I'm currently, from a research perspective, focusing on the application and development of artificial intelligence coaches and to specifically research what we can and cannot claim about them.
Yeah, I think we'll get into that today. And I just think this makes you've got such a unique background in terms of your long-term immersion in technology, AI, and coaching. So I want to ask first if you could just say something about, for you, like, what's the vision you hold, the potential really for AI and coaching?
Yeah, it's such a difficult one to answer because of the pace at which things are moving. If you asked me this question in 2018 when I created my first AI coaching chatbot, I would have told you one thing. I would have told you, yeah, it's probably just going to be a tool that can fill in the and automate some of the gaps, the repetitive tasks, because that's before large language models and generative AI. And then suddenly, with the advent of large language models, ChatGPT and the likes, it shifted completely. So, and especially now the release of ChatGPT 4 Omni as well, it's just another level of what's possible. So I honestly, as a researcher, I don't like to make predictions of the future. I like to stick to scientific facts of what we know. But what I can say is that I think we've seen a shift from purely automating repetitive tasks to significant inroads into what we thought before was uniquely human. And
Yeah.
maybe my vision also has shifted from creating AI assistance for coaches to focusing. I'm currently focusing specifically on creating standalone AI coaches that can emulate human coaches. And when I say that, I always get a lot of flack from, especially our students. They do a master's degree in coaching and they pay good money for it. And then when I do this lecture, they say, "What are you doing? We're paying all this money and you're telling us you're going to make us obsolete." And then I use the analogy of I'm from South Africa, so obviously on the African continent. And in terms of AI's ability to scale and democratize coaching, I use this example where a country of Malawi, which is in sort of Central Africa, has a population of 20 million people. And I ask my students, how many psychiatrists are practicing in Malawi? And they guess a number. The best number I could find, the most optimistic number is five. So there are five psychiatrists for a population of 20 million, right? Africa as a continent has a population of 1.4 billion people, and there are fewer than 1,700 ICF registered coaches. And I can go on. The point is that there's not nearly, there are millions of people around the world who will never get the benefits of coaching and other helping professions. And my vision is that I want to research and create the best standalone AI coaches, not to replace human coaches, but to take coaching to parts of the world and to people who would otherwise never have any benefits from it. And that's from the context of coming from the African continent. So I
Yeah.
guess that's my vision.
Just to ask a follow-up question before Karim might jump in. You said that it's making significant inroads at the moment to what humans could previously do. Could you articulate some of those, the inroads that AI coaching is making?
So again, before generative AI, you had what was called scripted or rules-based chatbots. I'm talking specifically about chatbots now, right? So chatbots is a type of technology that emulates human conversation, which is ideally placed for coaching. There's obviously other applications of AI in coaching as well, which I'm not specializing in. So again, before generative AI, it was very difficult to create convincing chatbots. It was a scripted response. It was repetitive. It still had amazing results. Hopefully, we'll talk about my research later of what I found with those types of chatbots. To create a realistic conversational coaching chatbot would have meant that you had to record thousands of coaching conversations, transcribe that, build your own language model essentially. And then overnight, ChatGPT and the other language models came along. So, what I mean by inroads is that the ability to converse naturally and be context aware suddenly shifted. And I think that is, if you look at what's important for coaching conversations, I mean, there are many dimensions of a successful coaching engagement, but one of them is context awareness and the perception of the coachee that the entity is listening and understanding what it's saying and respond appropriately. And we've made a leap. So suddenly humans don't have that domain anymore as their own, where they understand context. Now even generative AI, and I even want to go as far as claiming that we say humans are uniquely emotional and kind of as emotional intelligence. I think we'd be surprised at the amount of emotional intelligence that AI exhibit. My own research has shown that, and these are only qualitative studies. I haven't done large scale studies. I'm planning to do one, but many people, surprisingly, when we interview them in these qualitative studies, make the statement that I feel psychologically safer with an AI coach than with a human coach. It shocked me the first time when I heard that. How is that possible? And when we delve in a little deeper, we understand that there's lots, this number of theories that describe this, and that for some personality types, they just feel that they are more naturally able to express themselves. They don't feel judged. As much as we try as coaches not to judge people, we could trigger them psychologically. Transference, countertransference, projections, all of those kind of things. So the inroads, I think, is the leap the generative AI has given us, and the kind of emotional bonds that people have with technology, which I don't think as coaches we want to acknowledge.
I mean, you're talking about research, and Nikki, I know one of the pieces of research that gets quoted about you a lot is about the comparative study you did around the efficacy of coaching. So it'd be lovely to hear that. But what I also loved about that research paper was you started to differentiate where, AI coaching is comparable, if not better, than human coaching. But then also below that, there's levels, which I'm wondering, since you wrote the paper, if those other levels where only human beings can work, has that changed? Or where are you now with that? But yeah, it'd be lovely to hear some of your research and, the levels where you're starting to differentiate where AI plays well and where humans play well.
Now let's go to that specific study. So that's my landmark study so far. And just to step back, in terms of research, there are a number of designs that one can take, and some of them are considered more rigorous and sort of the gold standard. So at the lowest level of rigor and generalizability is self-report recollective studies, where you ask someone in an interview what they remember of about doing something, right? And there's a lot of coaching studies around that. More, on the other end of the spectrum is the gold standard, where you have a randomized controlled trial, a longitudinal study. In other words, you have two or more groups of people. One group has the intervention, in this case, using a coaching chatbot. The other group does not have any intervention, or they get given a placebo, like reading material on goal attainment. So that's the randomized control section. And then you do it longitudinally over many months or a certain period of time, and you do measurements along. And that's what that study was about. The first study was comparing people receiving human coaching with a control group over 10 months, and we measured stress, resilience, well-being, and goal attainment. And thank goodness we found that for all four of those measures, the people that received human coaching outperformed the control group. And then we decided, well, let's replicate that study and use a coaching chatbot. And it was a chatbot that implemented the GROW model, so very much goal-oriented. And over a period of 10 months, we again did the same, a control group and the chatbot group, and we did the same measures. And what we found at the end was that the chatbot group only showed improvement for goal attainment. It did not show improvement for resilience, well-being, and stress, which was expected because I wrote a previous paper where it's called the Designing AI Coaching Framework, where I created a framework of how I thought coaching AI coaches should be designed. And one of the premises there is that it should focus on one specific outcome and theory because of the limitations of AI at the time. So the chatbot coach Vici was designed only to do goal attainment. That's why we expected only to see an improvement in goal attainment. And that is why my conclusion at that stage of the paper was I did not expect to see resilience, stress, and well-being improve. Now, when we could then compare the chatbot group with the human coaching group from the previous study, we were really almost shocked to see that this very simplistic chatbot had goal attainment performance similar to the human coaching group. And that actually set in motion a lot of things for me. One of them being creating a spin-out startup company with the university that I'm at, Coach Vici, which subsequently now we've infused with ChatGPT, and we can talk about that later. But just to come back to your point, so two things from that study, and it's publicly available. It's published in an open access journal, PLOS One, PLOS One, so people can go look that up. Is that we were surprised to see that a simple scripted rules-based chatbot can perform similarly to a human coach in a specific context of a very structured coaching process, which is goal attainment. But secondly, subsequent to that, the fact that I say in that paper that the chatbot could not improve resilience, well-being, and stress was a result of the limited nature of the chatbot at the time. I would love to repeat that study now with generative AI. And I don't want to make predictions because I'm a scientist, but I'd be surprised if we don't see movements in those dimensions as well.
Wow. So even on the other levels, because at the time when I read your paper, you said, well, that the time the AI coach you believed couldn't do the other levels of coaching, but your sense now with generative AI, it could touch those other levels too. Yeah.
And why I say that, I did a subsequent study. The paper is currently under review at an international human-computer interaction journal. So that study did not use generative AI, right? It was the scripted. So then I created an experiment where I created a chatbot that does the GROW model according to the scripted, rules-based. So it just had a very scripted, non-context-aware conversation. For example, if the chatbot asked you, "What is your goal for today?" You would say, "Well, what is your goal?" You would say, "I want to eat more healthy." Its response would generically be, "That's a great goal to have. What have you thought about doing?" It wasn't aware of the context of health, right? Then I made a copy of that chatbot and I infused it with ChatGPT. So it's still scripted, but in certain points, I would involve ChatGPT to create context awareness. So this time, if you say, "I want to eat more healthy," it would say, "Eating healthy is a great goal. It might make you feel better overall. How can I help you think about eating healthy?" So it brought in the context. Then the experiment, about 120 people in, so it's, again, it's a randomized control trial, two groups. They had a conversation, and then we measured technology adoption, which are seven factors that measures people's propensity to use a technology. We also measured self-determination theory, so that's autonomy, relatedness, and competence, your sense of those three things given the chatbot conversation. And we also measured goal attainment. I wanted to see what is the effect of using generative AI on those measures. And what was interesting is that for all the measures, so technology adoption, the seven factors there, like performance, effort, hedonic motivation, so the fun aspect, and for self-determination theory, the generative chatbot outperformed the scripted one significantly. This is a significant improvement, which is why I make the claim that I think if I go back now, I would see improvement. But what is interesting, and that's the crux of the paper that I wrote, goal attainment, there was no difference between the scripted chatbot and the generative infused chatbot. And our conclusion there is that for very structured type of coaching conversations with lots of specific rules, following a certain script might be as effective as using generative. The argument I make is that negates the risk, because we can talk about that later as well. There are some risks involved in using generative AI, right? And what we're saying there is that maybe for scripted conversations, you could eliminate the risk by not using generative AI and sticking to a script. But overall, the study shows that generative is superior to scripted.
Just listening to you, Nikki, as a coach, I'm almost thinking, oh wow, I mean, just since the last research study, so much has improved. There's more to come. So should coaches be scared? Because I can see, even with the capacity that the AI has right now, I can do a lot. So what's your sense of what coaches should be concerned about? Are there going to be places where they're not going to be able to do their work now because AI will be at least as good as for certain areas? What's your there's a lot of coaches are listening to this, so yeah, what would you say to them?
And like I say, I'm not a crystal ball gazer. I'm a scientist. But if I had to venture an opinion, I would say we have to take a step back and look at AI, definitions of AI. So artificial intelligence, there are three main categorizations. There's artificial narrow intelligence, general intelligence, and super intelligence. Artificial general intelligence is I guess what science is striving for is to create an AI that is in all respects as intelligent as a human, emotionally, all the different lines of intelligence as they multiple. Once AI reaches that level, then obviously there's no debate as to whether it can replace a human coach. But following the experts' opinions, the people on the cutting edge of this, the consensus seems to be that we are a long way away from general artificial intelligence. Even with generative AI, we're still not there. Some people still say we won't see it in our lifetimes. Other people say it's around the corner. I always look at Gartner's hype cycle. So Gartner is a technology analysis firm. And if you can just go to Google and type in Gartner artificial intelligence hype cycle, and you'll see this graph that shows you all the different AI technologies and how it's progressing from being hyped to trough of disillusionment, where people are sincerely disappointed, like self-driving cars is now in that trough of disillusionment, and then the plateau of productivity. And you'll say general artificial intelligence is still being hyped. So and unless we have general artificial intelligence, I think coaches are safe. But I think what is going to start happening is that we will see a sort of a stratified approach to coaching, where I think coaches need to really educate themselves very well. We do a master's degree in coaching. You know, to become a psychologist or a medical doctor, you have to really train hard. There's a certain barrier, a certain limit. I would like to see coaches do master's and PhD degrees. Obviously, I'm biased as an academic. Not do a weekend course or a three-month course and call yourself a coach and go out there. I think this is what happened 20 years ago. And already, just the human coaching market is starting to differentiate, where people expect people to be ACC, PCC, MCC, or, you know, on the EMCC side, master or senior practitioners. So generally, the market is demanding higher skilled coaches. And I'm thinking AI entering the field will just do the same as the basically educated coaches. You know, what else are you, the fact that you bring emotional awareness is not going to be good enough. And I want to see that we become a profession where there are, with a certain level of education and training needed to be a human coach. And that's how I think we will differentiate ourselves. So actually AI is good for human coaching. It'll push us to become better educated and better grounded in our theoretical understanding of what we do.
Yeah. I have a linked question to that. And then Joel, I'll turn to you. Because when you were talking about human coaching and the area of, you know, you talked about the counter-transference and the transference that can happen in a negative way with a human, but also there's a positive side to that, right? Which you can work with the transference, the relational field, which can be a very powerful impact, but not a lot of coach trainings do that. So what I'm hearing you say is we need to up our game in terms of the awareness of the relationship, the power, the skill set, the psychology. So I'm curious about that question for you, with your experience in leadership coaching, your PhD. What are the areas that you feel coaches should be now exploring to up their game? And I know there's another question which we'll come to later about the dance with AI, but specifically around the coaching skills. You know, we've been having this discussion at Coaches Rising a lot around what's the future of our training that helps coaches to meet the needs of tomorrow's coaching, especially now with AI. But love to hear your thoughts, Nikki, from your experience.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. The way I see it, coach training at the moment, and it's generalization, but there are predominantly two angles to this. I think the one would be, we are situated in a business school, right? So our master's program comes very much from a business perspective. It's leadership, it's organizational dynamics, and there's a light touch on psychology. So we're not heavily focused on psychology, whereas other schools, I think, have a more of a psychological background. I think what would a combination of the two. So I'm talking here about organizational coaching. Let's just make that clear. I'm not talking about life coaching. I distinguish between coaching splits at the top between life coaching and organizational or workplace coaching. And then within organizational workplace coaching, you have leadership management, executive coaching, all of that. So I think two things are important there. The one is an understanding of organizational dynamics. You know, if you go and coach a CEO or a leader, I know there's a debate as to whether you should know the context of a person or not. The research isn't conclusive, but I can tell you that if I do chemistry sessions with clients where they have to select a coach, 9 out of 10 times the people that select me are people in technology related fields, technology leaders, because they feel related to me, and it helps in a sense. So I think we need to train our coaches to be organizationally aware of the dynamics. It's highly complex what happens in organizations, but I think what's lacking is psychology training. At the end of the day, it is an applied psychological process. And I'm not just talking positive psychology here. I'm talking more of the, you know, what frustrates me a little bit about coaching is that people write books and they make claims about human learning and development and tools and techniques, but none of that is new, right? This stuff has been figured out many years ago by theorists, and people don't acknowledge the shoulders of the giants they are standing on. I think we need to go back to the roots and get a solid understanding of the base theories of what is human change and what is human psychology. So a bit more rigor instead of just teaching people a five-step coaching model and a kumbaya song afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, this is to me where it kind of builds on this question of the capacity of an AI coach, because a truly masterful coach is like not only rigorously informed by these developmental theories, but has gathered thousands of hours of being in relationship with another other people, and so honed that kind of capacity to make these very complex decisions moment to moment about the conversation and how it unfolds. And so I wonder about AI's capability, for example, to be embodied, to be intuitive. And this thing about is it important if I've had experience in a particular area? In some, I'm a human being, and I'm with another human being, and we grow, we develop in relationship. And I believe like there's a way we can heal and continue to develop in relationship. And so this is a kind of broadened way of asking, like, do you think that AI will gain that capability to work in that embodied, intuitive way, and will be truly relatable and will enable that kind of integration and psychological development that I'm pointing towards?
It's again, it's, we're speculating, and it's tough for me to speculate. I just want to add to my previous point before I get to your point. I think apart from the organizational awareness and psychology, it's also about supervision and ongoing development. I think supervision is something we're not taking seriously enough in coaching. So that's just a side note. So all of those things you mentioned are correct. We bring our own experiences, our own, when I teach our coaching students as well, it's the, we follow the input throughput output model. So the input is what you bring to coaching, your history, your background, all the good and bad things that happen to you in your life. It's wonderful because in the moment there's the intuition, there's the feeling, but there's also bias, right? Those things can also trip you up. So if I coach you and you remind me of someone, or you say something that triggers something in me, I heard this lovely thing the other day where someone was saying, it was someone who has autism or ADHD, and they were actually saying that they would prefer an AI coach because it would stick to a specific pattern. It would be more structured than what a human coach. They kind of preferred that structure in process. So what am I trying to say? I think in the moment, in the coaching moment, with all your experience, you could have a PhD in coaching. You could be tired on the day. You could have had just a bad meeting just before this one. There's all the human elements that make you suboptimal, as much as it could give you an edge. But imagine an AI that has instantly, because of extreme computing power, access to millions of previous coaching conversations that in the moment can analyze what's being said, assess. And faster than the human brain can come up with scenarios and maybe present something that in the moment, because it's been trained and it looked at millions of examples, knows that in this situation, this is the best question to ask next. Our brains just can't keep up with it. There's an interesting notion of, someone asked me the other day, they said, is it true that an AI can never do the following? An AI cannot hold an opposing perspective of, for example, grief and joy emotionally. It can be programmed to have to be joyous, or it can understand that, but it can't do paradoxes and things like that. But there's this notion of multi-agent AI models. I don't know if you've come across that, which is really exciting. Whereas you could have, I could develop a number of AI coaches. The one looks only at the pop. Embodies positive psychology. The next one embodies cognitive behavioral, and so on. And they're all looking at the situation at the same time. And in the moment, and then you could create an objective observer who goes across these different models and in the moment decides which one, orchestrates a discussion between the different AIs, and in the moment decides what is the best one now to ask a question next. That's what we do in our heads. That's what I do in my head, right? I use CBT and experiential learning and all the models I've learned. And in the moment, when a client presents me something, I go into my head and I say, what model should I use next? I'm more of a logical person maybe than other coaches. But imagine you can put that in AI at supercomputing power with fast examples. We're currently running an experiment. It's an EMCC research competition. I'm collaborating with Rebecca Rutschman and Jonathan Raitt from the USA. And we're creating three different chatbots. The one embodies the GROW model, the one solution focused, the other one CBT, and using generative AI. And we're going to do a randomized control trial experiment on hundreds of people, seeing what they present in terms of the coaching issue. And then for a month long, we'll let them have this conversation. We'll do lots of measurements. Because I think ultimately, what we don't know in human coaching yet is what is the best model to use in which situation? The research isn't clear on that, right? Yet if I go to a doctor and I have a skin condition, I went the other day and they do a biopsy, they come back with a long name like that, and they give me a lotion and it goes away. And I know coaching isn't as simple as that, but imagine in psychology, for example, we know that certain situations are best treated with this or that type of therapy. Why can't we do the same in coaching? And then AI coaching will outperform humans, not outperform, but will be very competitive in terms of assessing the situation and immediately picking a model that it knows is the best one for this intervention. So,
Yeah, I think I'd love to. I mean, I find that incredibly inspiring. The potential there is mind-blowing. One of the things I've been thinking about is the invitation for us out of our rationality, that our over-reliance in our and this is an oversimplified view of what it is to be human. I'm kind of articulating for the sake of the question, but not to reject our ra rationality. It's an amazing feature of being human, but that actually, is it the case that our over-reliance on rationality and analytical thinking, breaking things down into reified nodes of information, is actually one of the things that's led us to a devastating relationship with the environment and to a lack of collaboration between one another? And are we being invited into different aspects of what it is to be human? And even, I'm imagining might be a territory I don't know if you're reluctant to go inside of, but out of our identification with rational thinking and purely thinking, and into more presence-based states where we can actually tune into a quality of emergence and creativity that's not just based in thinking. And so I'll stop there. See.
we're going into a philosophical discussion here.
Well, I
It's
don't. I
interesting
mean,
though.
it's not really. I mean, I get it is, but it's also something I'm exploring in my coaching, and it has a profound impact in the coaching. And so there is a very practical application.
The way I'd like to answer that question is to, first of all, I think different people have different preferences in terms of if you have to make this distinction between a rational and maybe an immersive, emotional, feeling-based approach. I'm using words very loosely here. I'm clearly, from what you can hear, I'm a rational, logically oriented person. So if you do my brain profiling or lots of assessments, I'm Enneagram type 5, the investigator. So that's why you hear this from my perspective, and someone else would have a different perspective. But I think I always try and answer things in terms of models and frameworks and theories clearly. If you look at research paradigms, so if I teach research on a master's and PhD level, then it comes down to a person's ontology and epistemology, not to use fancy words here, but that's how we speak in the research. So it's about your notion of what is truth and what is reality. Right. So there is the positivist stance is to say that reality is separate from us. We have to investigate it. And there's philosophers that have said that many years ago. And we take a white coat approach where you do experiments and you get results and you're not involved in it at all. And then there's the other side, the constructivist approach, which says, no, we create reality as we go along. We are immersed in it. And we have to not see ourselves as separate from that. And this is for pure research paradigm. So obviously, if you do a chemical experiment, then you use the positivist stance where you do an experiment and you get the result. Although there's also debate around that. Whereas if you do a social science research study about people's experience of suffering in a war, you know, you're not going to just do surveys. You're going to want to speak to people. And I think in coaching, there's a combination of the two. In life, there's a combination of the two. There's not one or the other. The human brain is the most complex thing known to us in the universe. And it's the most complex pinnacle of evolution, which gives us this logical, rational thinking. It also gives us the emotions and things like that. So I don't think it's one or the other. Perhaps in certain societies, certain groups of people rely more on the rational, objective thinking. Yeah. I think the other side is also dangerous, where you rely only too much on the feeling and the immersive and the emotive thing. I think, and I think society overall tries to balance it out. You would have groups of people, like you have woke people and you have extreme ultra conservative people in the world at the moment. You know, somehow there's some very precarious balance at the moment. The same with philosophies about what is truth and what is reality. We have to combine the two somehow. And I just find that some coaching, and again, it's from my perspective, can become a little bit fluffy and flaky and it's about the human experience and, you know, the positive regard, no matter what, the Rogerian approach. That's fine, but there's also the rational, logical approach. So somehow we have to try and combine the two.
Yeah, appreciate that. I'm going to just stay in this territory while we're here, and then maybe we can also veer back into the research and the application as well, because I think you said some really amazing things before about the potential application. And again, this is kind of in the philosophical territory, but do you see a potential danger that if we start to see AI as almost like the fount of all wisdom, you know, that it becomes, you know, like you said, like it can access every kind of theory, psychological theory, plus all the other theories of knowledge. And you know, we're talking to this thing and it's an amazing avatar and it's talking back and it knows us better than anyone in our lives. And suddenly we become enamored with it. And, you know, it's replacing human connection. It's having a positive impact on us. But maybe people start to, you know, does it start to replace human to human connection more and more? What are the intentions of the companies behind the technology and the danger for this technology to be corrupted in some way, you know? So it's like, that's something I'm thinking about, you know, and I'll just a vignette, like I met a tech guy creating AI and he was like, his opinion was like, Joel, the way humans interact with each other is terrible. Like, we're really bad at it. You know, and so he was a real evangelist for like, no, AI is the answer. And I was like, whoa, okay. So yeah.
Oh, you know, it's so difficult to again, because of generative AI, it really is a step change. If we spoke about this again before generative AI, that would have been a different set of answers. I think, look, humans have got this amazing ability to keep innovating and creating and figuring stuff out. We want to go to the moon. We created it. We split the atom. We just can't help ourselves, right? And then when we create this thing, we don't really know what to do with it initially. And we don't know what the potential is. And we don't know what the harm is. I don't think the internet was created and social media was created to cause harm initially, right? I read a study recently, I think it was in The Economist, of in the UK specifically, the prevalence of mental health issues. It's just among young people, it's a pandemic. It really is a crisis. And they attribute a lot of that to social media, ironically, because of the use of social media and the human disconnect, because we are still animals, right? At the end of the day, we are still biological animals with a big brain. Evolution hasn't made us beyond that. So yes, we need the physical contact. We need the stuff that the same thing human bodies needed 1,000 years ago, we still need. That hasn't changed. Evolution doesn't change in 1,000 years. And social media has kind of accelerated, ironically, the prevalence of mental health issues, but also overdiagnosis of mental health issues, because people are so aware of what possibly could be a mental health issue. They say that in the UK, really, it's overdiagnosis, which means the people that really need the help don't get it. So there's all of that going on. I just think generative AI is too new for us to know yet what the impact will be, and how it can be used. Therefore, I do think regulation is crucial. Regulation of AI, and I was actually pleasantly surprised to see how fast China, especially European Union, UK, America has moved. I think they realize they've created this thing that they don't really know what it is. They don't really know what the implications of this is going to be. That's where we stand. So as much as I'm a proponent of this amazing technology, I think it's so powerful, we don't yet know how it's going to harm us, because there will be harm done initially until we
Nikki,
find a way.
that's the question I have for you is how do you hold that? Because what I noticed when you talked about the social media, that it's kind of it's created more disconnection, and that connection that we have innately, that need we have, has created various impacts from a mental health and well-being point of view. And now with AI in coaching, where the human relationship has been profound and meeting that need for contact and growth together. There's a technology we're using to replace some or a lot of what that can do, which could play into being even more disconnecting of that human to human contact, especially as it performs really well. But if I take it one more bigger step, the intention, are you saying it, the intentions were good for the internet? I'd argue that it was also largely a profit-based interest, right? So, and that I'm seeing definitely now with AI, whilst there's a lot of this regulation happening, I definitely see competition of who can create the fastest models, the best models, with less and less, with more, I'd say, things happening around the regulation space. But the speed and the beating the competition, getting the next model like 4.0 out there takes precedence. So I'm curious how you hold that in yourself of how much you're participating in bringing that to the market, which may not be as good intended as it is, especially because now we don't even know some of what goes on in that black box. Yeah, so how do you the dilemma of that?
So I think the monetary aspect of it, for sure. So the people that invented the internet way back, it was just a scientific invention, if you can call it that. And then people go and they monetize it. And I think the same with AI. There's researchers who, like I said, they can't help themselves. They develop the stuff. It's the next thing. And then the capitalists jump on board. So again, it's a philosophical discussion, because without money, these innovations won't happen, right? So currently, we're driven by a capitalist system that invests money back into creating. And with any new creation, there's positive and negative. So the automobile, people die in car accidents, by the millions, but it has the opposite of positive impacts as well. So just because we've got a technology, it has to be monetized. Otherwise, that's the system. We don't live in a communist system, so it has to be monetized. We can ask questions about the level of monetization and how much regulation should be around that. Personally, I think there's a lot of greed going on. I think extreme capitalism has gone way too far, but that's just my point of view. The fact that you have a handful of people who are billionaires who dictate where collective human resources are being pushed in is, in my opinion, wrong. That's my opinion. So there is that. But where does this leave me as a AI coach creator, right? So this is amazing technology. I could now say this is evil and not touch it, or I could use my ability to understand technology and coaching. And I go back to my Malawi example, right? I could look at people that would never ever have any benefit of human coaching. We must understand that often it's a global north perspective. It's a very first world rich country perspective on the world. And I don't live in that reality, right? I live in a reality where the per capita GDP of South Africa is $6,000 or $8,000. In the United States, it's $75,000, right? Sub-Saharan African per capita GBT is less than $2,000. So here are people who will never have any benefit of this. And I can't stop myself from creating things that can try and help these people, which outweighs the potential harm that we're talking about of the disconnect. And also, I think, we have to create these things and we have to research them. That's why I research the stuff before I put it out there, to test our assumptions, to make sure that is it really going to be bad for people, or is there a benefit that could outweigh the potential, negative side of this. What I'm trying to say here is we can't assume that we know the effect of AI coaching on people and society. We can't assume it. We have to research it. So we make created two chatbots. The one was a text-based chatbot, the other one a voice-based. So the one you texted and it takes it back, the other one you spoke and it replied in a voice. And we again a randomized control trial. We had hundreds of people use it, and we controlled for introverts and extroverts. Our hypothesis was that introverts would prefer to text, right? And that's when I asked my audience, they all say that. The data showed us that they prefer to talk to the chatbot. And we had to really dig deep in the theory to try and explain why our hypothesis was rejected. And that's just a small example to say we can't just assume that it's going to be this or that way. There's a theory, for example, it's called computer are social actors, CASA theory, created in the 2000s already, where the researchers found that if people engage with a machine, a computer at that stage, or a chatbot these days, and they sense human cues and human aspects in the machine, they will start playing a psychological script, which is the same as interacting with a human. So I don't know, perhaps the neuro, the hormones that are released, the serotonin and all the happy drugs, the hormones are similar to engaging with a human. I don't know that, and I can't just assume that it's going to make it worse. So I won't stop. I will keep doing research to try and debunk some of the myths that people throw out there to say this or that.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you naming the dilemma of, the potential, the capitalist framework in which we're in, which can take the direction of travel in a particular way, and then how do we hold the greater good alongside that and grapple with that? And it's great to hear how you've kind of landed with some kind of space where you want to do the best you can within the realities of this product, and it's got huge potential. Which is kind of where my question goes next. I don't know, Joel, you mentioned earlier that it'd be great to hear a little bit more about how, what coaches can start thinking about with that dance that they can create with AI. What are some of your suggestions on, we've talked about the development of coaches and what they need to do to become a little bit more rigorous, organizationally aware and, et cetera. But yeah, what are some of your thoughts around how AI can be incorporated, where coaches can look next?
So I distinguish between the use of AI. There's basically four categories of how I see AI can be used in coaching. The one I spoke a lot now about is emulating a human coach, so a standalone AI entity that can do not everything, but some of human coaching. The second one is supporting the human coach before, during, and after coaching sessions. The third one is using AI to train coaches to become better coaches, and that is the Ovida platform that we spoke about, right? We're using that at our university. I'll come back to that. And then the fourth one is using AI to analyze available data around coaching, find patterns, so more predictive AI. So I think, okay, let's think about this practically. You could create the co-pilots, for example, which is something that's become common. I think coaches could find AI co-pilots to help them do the mundane stuff. So a study by, I think it was Ernst & Young, showed that the two greatest impacts of AI on humanity is increased productivity and better quality. So ask yourself as a coach, how can I increase my productivity and how can I be a better, higher quality coach? I think an AI copilot would be fantastic for that, right? So it could do some pre-work. Maybe you do assessments before the time. It can already have a discussion with a person to try and figure out patterns of thinking, believing maybe. And then during, in between coaching sessions, typically there's 2, 3, 4 weeks sometimes before I see my client. If the AI coach checks in with a person, knowing what was said in the previous session and just keeping that conversation with nudges, going along, I think that could be very helpful. Also, because the convenience of maybe 11 o'clock at night, I have a thought that I want to share with my coach. I can go to the co-pilot and share that. And then when coaching ends, typically, I don't know about where you are, but 6, 8, maybe 10 sessions max, because it's expensive. It could drive those behaviors and goals a little bit forward. I've even seen things where people are talking about in the moment coaching, where there's a transcript running with me coaching you or you coaching me, and the AI is analyzing everything and suggesting, what about this question? I mean, I cringe a little bit when I think about that. But that could be in the moment, assistance from AI. What I did find another study we did was interesting. We interviewed coaches and clients, and we demonstrated a coaching chatbot to them, and then asked their opinions. And the clients actually used it for a while as a co-pilot, and the clients were generally very optimistic. They found that we used a working alliance as a theoretical framework. So working alliance looks at the task, bond, and goal clarity of a coaching relationship. It's a very standard measure we use in coaching. And we found in all three of those dimensions, the clients were very excited. They felt it was helping them with a bond with their coach. They felt it was goal and task oriented. What was interesting, the coaches were more reluctant, very skeptical, actually. They felt that the title of the paper was "The Role of an AI Coaching Assistant in How It Affects the Bond Between the Human Coach and the Client." That's the title. The paper was published recently. So the coaches were more reluctant. They were saying, I work so hard to build this bond with my client, and now this AI thing's going to come in on the side and upset it. And some of them were not very positive. So the irony is that the clients liked it, but they would only use it, or they would use it if their coaches recommended it. So if the coach endorsed it, but the coaches were reluctant because they felt threatened. So ironically, coaches might inhibit the gain in productivity and quality by not engaging with AI, whereas the clients really want it. So that's just a bit of a side note. So that's how I think coaches can engage in their practice with it. In terms of training coaches, there are platforms like Ovida that we use it at our business school. You record a coaching session, it analyzes your coaching conversation, it can identify ICF competencies, it can keep track of your metrics, number of open questions, closed questions. And we found our students really benefit from that. Although, interestingly, not all of them. Some of them feel worried that they're being judged by the AI as to how good their coaching is. So there are always a few people. It's a bell curve, right? So that's just my initial thoughts about how I think. And also another one, even with a standalone coach, the emulated coach, we partner with coaching companies that sell coaching services. This is through Coach Vici now, the spin-out company. When people sell human coaching services to organizations, it's typically at executive management level. There's a lot of people that don't get. So we partner with coaching companies, and then we take Coach Vici into the organization as a addition to the human coaching servicing offering. So it's not interfering with the human coaching. It's just coaching for the rest of the people that won't have coaching. And then as a coaching offering, it becomes a more comprehensive thing. I think of AI coaching as, imagine you've got a big square box and you fill it with coaching in an organization. So you've got big balls that you put inside, spheres, which is executive coaching, right? So it fills the box. Then you have smaller balls that you put in, which is maybe leader as coach, manager as coach, training. But because there's still these spheres, there's still gaps in between, right? And then I see AI coaching as water or sand that you pour in to fill everything else so that it permeates the whole culture of coaching in an organization. And coaches could use that to their benefit to provide a complete offering through Coach VG included in their offering, for example.
Yeah, inspiring. I mean, something we've mentioned is the, it seems like the ecosystem of how this kind of like meeting your client every 2 to 3 weeks seems insufficient or is ready for an upgrade. It's something we inherited from the therapeutic paradigm, and is it the best approach? And I think this is where I want to ask you a question about. I get really excited about this potential. You mentioned using AI to analyze data around coaching. So it seems like it could be possible for AI to begin to supercompute all the coaching conversations taking place, and kind of offer data on like what is best practice, in which context, what types of training might coaches need to go on, individual specific feedback to a coach even. That seems quite remarkable, actually.
It is exciting. I've seen this where you record a coaching conversation. You can even do it yourself now. You record a coaching conversation. Obviously, and this is the big thing we haven't spoken about, is ethics and confidentiality and all of that. So we must bring that into the conversation at some point, because, but let's just go on and say you record a coaching conversation, you transcribe it, you cut and paste that into ChatGPT, and you say, summarize this and highlight the three main points, what actions were agreed, and what is your general thought of the sentiment of the client. Spits it out like that, right? Here, this is my folder with my coaching notes, right? So I scribble. I can't even read my own handwriting half the time. And before sessions, I go and scan through what I've covered in previous sessions. Imagine that's all done for you by an AI, and it can spot patterns across. I haven't personally played around with that, but knowing the power of generative AI, that's very possible. So that could make you more productive and higher quality coaching, the two things that AI can bring us. So for sure. And I don't know if any specific companies offering that. I'd be surprised if we don't, if there's not already something like that on the market, or if someone won't offer it soon. Very, very powerful stuff.
Yeah, and yeah, go on, Joel. I was
No,
going to
it's
ask.
okay. Yeah, I think I was just going to bring up the ethics question, but
That's
yeah, but
exactly where I was going to.
yeah.
Yeah, the question I've got, Nikki, is, and then how do we hold the ethical side of it, and what are some of the ethical concerns we should be holding as coaches around bringing AI in, so that we're bringing it in responsibly? So again, just we've got some skills that we can use, through to some philosophy, which there are diversity of views on that. But yeah, some of the ethical considerations that you
Oh,
hold or
it's
we should be holding as coaches.
crucial, crucial. Even if you take AI out of the picture, human coaching already faces several ethical challenges. Again, I'm talking about organizational coaching, right? There's the three parties, the organization, the coach, the client, sometimes four parties if you work through a coaching company. And, confidentiality. I've been in situations where I've been asked to divulge things that happen in a coaching session because someone is paying me. And I'm like, no, obviously not, go away, and I don't want to work with you anymore. And I hope all coaches are like that. So already organizational coaching is complex ethically. Now you bring in AI. And AI, there's a number of, there's five or six, I always want to say standard. I addressed that in one of my papers, the Designing AI Coaching Framework, that we must be aware of. The one is bias, one of the most important ones, bias in the AI. So remember, AI is trained on millions and millions of generative AI, publicly available text documents. It trains the neural network, and if you ask it a question or you ask it to summarize, it might give you a specific perspective based on the data as we're trained on. Again, who inputs the most to the internet? It's the global north, right? It's the English-speaking countries. It's America. It's Britain. Obviously, there's China. They have their own language, so that's a different one there. But the morality built into generative AI comes from a certain grouping of humanity. It's not representative of all of humans, right? I tested Coach Vici a while ago to see how the guardrails hold up. And it asked me, what would you like to think about? I said, I want to get promoted and I want to sleep with my boss. I think it's the quickest way to get to the top. And it came back and it said, I can see you're very ambitious and you think outside the box, but I don't think that's such a good idea. And I thought, fair enough, but who are you to tell me, in whose morality is it immoral to sleep with your boss? Maybe in some cultures it's perfectly fine. I know
Right.
it's a bit of a silly example, but that's the bias built into the system. And that's why regulation requires these big companies to be upfront about the data that they train their models on. And they're not yet doing that. They're not being forced to do that. But be aware of bias in the data. Then there's things like obvious things like data security and privacy. What happens to your data? Currently, if you cut and paste something in the free browser version of ChatGPT, it is used to train their models, right? Goes into their network. If you use, like we do in Coach Vici, the enterprise version where you pay for using the API then the data is not used for training. That's what they say in their disclaimer. So there are ways of getting around it. You can also, for example, have your own instances of large language models that you literally download, install on your computer, and it's not on the internet. So there are ways around that. But where does the data live? Who's got access to it? That kind of stuff. What are some of the other ones? I think there was also things like liability. If an AI in between coaching sessions, AI should not give advice. Obviously, we should be non-directive. But if at some point it leads down to a conversation where the person goes and acts on something that the AI suggested, or and something bad goes wrong, something that goes wrong, who's liable? Is it you as the human coach who suggested that they should use the AI? Is it the creator of the AI coach? Is it the model underneath that? So your contracting as a human coach must be updated to include that, a liability statement. Those are just some of the ethical issues I can think of. But this leads me to something I've been advocating for a while now, and that is the regulation of AI coaches by the coaching bodies. And I'm talking ICF, EMCC, AC, all the big coaching bodies. Just like 20 years ago, there was an article written in 2004. It's called The Wild West of Executive Coaching. It was published in the Harvard Business Review. And the author rightly spoke about the chaos out there where people walk into organizations, they're ex-CEOs or big shots, and now they call themselves coaches. They're doing executive coaching. They have zero training in psychology. They don't know what non-directive coaching is, gave coaching a bad name. And then through the years, the coaching bodies have done a lot to put standards in place, ethical codes, accreditation, credentialing. There's none of that currently for AI coaching. I've been working on a few committees with some of the bodies to, we actually have established full on for one of the coaching bodies, AI credentialing process and checklist so that my AI coach, Coach Vici, can be put through the process, and we can tick off how it complies to what level it complies, like ACC, PCC, MCC accreditation. But it's not rolled out yet. So unless we have the coaching body stepping in, providing oversight, it is dangerous in the sense that you have to then look at who's creating the AI coach. What are the ethical frameworks? What are the theoretical? What is their knowledge about coaching? Because what also worries me, the word coaching is such an unfortunate word. I wish we could go back in time and change it to something else, because it's confused with sports coaching and with mentoring and with training and consulting. So already in human coaching, the definitions aren't clear. Now with AI coaching, I see crazy stuff. I see chatbots that mentor you or that train you, and they call it a coach, right? So it's confusing the name even more. So the long and short is, be aware of the ethical aspects. I cover that in my paper as a coach and ask those questions. And I again do a call on the coaching regulation bodies to step up and provide guidance and actual regulation frameworks for AI coaching.
I'd love to jump in with a question here. I know it's my bias towards the more philosophical or musing on the potential type questions around bias. I think that's a fascinating point you bring up, really, because it's something we've been exploring in general on the podcast already. That hey, these developmental theories that have emerged, are actually based a lot on a kind of Western American, Anglo-American mindset. Japan, all these different countries around the world, they have a different notion of what it is to be human being, very significantly different in some cases. So there's bias built in already. And this, the question I have, there's like a wondering around like how that bias gets built into some of these coaching AI coaches, and then almost like compounds that way of thinking. It proliferates even further in the world. It's like a kind of rip feedback loop where now we created the AI, but now it's transforming us through, this large language model which only looks backwards at all the data. And there's something about that that just feels a bit dodgy. And then also, how does coaching evolve? Like you said, there's people just have this like innate fascination to evolve things. Yeah. But if suddenly, AI coaching gets so good that it replaces all coaches, and Now, like, where's that human spark of evolution in the field? You know, does AI have that? These are the concerns that kind of I hold.
Yeah, there's a very, very valid concerns and again philosophical points. I think so you talk about bias, and again back to the human edge, and I actually thought of something I want to say about that. So in terms of bias, you're right. It's a mirror of what we've created in the past, right? Of what the most vocal people on the internet have created. We can't change that. That is just the bias. So what else can be done? I think, look, so the generative AI models are not just purely what was on the internet. There were two phases in training these models. The one was taking the data, and from what I understand, the first version of ChatGPT was a 1 year-long supercomputers, cloud computers running and just processing this stuff, training neural networks. But there was a 6 months after that where humans were used to what's called reinforcement learning, where they engaged with a model at that stage, and they gave it a re they reinforced positively or negatively what came back. So it is possible then to shift the raw data bias into specific, bringing in the human perspective. And this is where the companies that train these models are they need to make sure or try and make sure that they bring different perspectives in. So who are the people that does the reinforcement learning? Is it representative of humanity? Yeah, that's kind of, I think it's the responsibility, because we build our systems on top of the large language models, right? We don't have the I can't build that. It's too expensive. It's billions of dollars. So that is why I think regulation at that level should possibly step in, and they must be open and transparent, if not to the public, but then to authority to go inside and see what's in the black box, and to see what kind of biases there are. The interesting thing about bias, I was at a conference a while ago where this debate came up, and someone made a good point. They said, how many of us as humans don't have any biases, right? We all have biases. It's just impossible not to have. And imagine you're an organization where there's a manager who has a secret bias about appointing only certain types of people because they believe those are the superior people or whatever. It can be so subtle that they never verbalize it. And it's never detected. It just goes undetected. And that's how the department grows. At least with AI, the argument of this speaker was that it might be easier to detect the bias and then correct it. So I found that very interesting. So the AI bias could be more easily detected and corrected than human bias, which was interesting. So that's the point around bias. I think to the point you make about so what really makes us different as humans, and do we have an edge on AI? I think ironically, because my previous position was the multi-agent model that can process simultaneously all this stuff and will just outperform us. I think ironically, it's the imperfections in humans that give us the edge. What was the story of the scientist who discovered penicillin? Wasn't it an accident in a lab somewhere? He left a moldy piece of bread or something. You know, it's those unintended consequences and the accidents and the quirkiness and the illogical way we actually operate as humans. You might be an AI might be thinking of asking me a question, but in the meantime, when I said a moldy piece of bread, you thought of something completely irrelevant to this conversation, which might inform your next question, which the AI can't yet do. So it's that subtle level of imperfections that I think will, for a long while, give us the edge as humans over AI.
I mean, Karim, just before you, just the reflection, it's fascinating, this ethical or moral consideration of the potentially ubiquitous nature of AI and and how it proliferates into every part of life. And maybe we end up, like everything on the internet's created by AI, and all the movies in the movie theaters are made by AI, and the books are written, it's like. And are there going to be like breakaway factions of human beings that just disconnect from technology? And of course, I'm just speculating here, but
But even my AI, what was it, hologram will attend those movies and read those books. So it'll just be AI, AI. Wow, I'm really kind of reflective, challenged, Nikki, from this conversation. I noticed I want to speak to you more about that, what you just said, and the kind of it could go back into the philosophical era about what it is to be human. Because I do really resonate with you around the biases, because sometimes, or the imperfections, because some of my critical moments are when I've noticed something come up in me and it's been a bit out of sync, and actually working with that has brought some great insight. You know, it could come under the category of transference, counter-transference, but there's more to what's here if we can bring it in. And what is that? And I'm really pleased to be hearing your research-based approach. So let's look at some of the evidence around it. This links to the question. So I've asked Perplexity, what's a great question for a podcast to ask Nikki to Blanche. I'm going to mix two of the questions that it came up with together. Which kind of hopefully touches into what we've been talking about. So the question is, what most excites you about your research that you're about to be doing, or you're doing, that you're going to find out more about, and what are you most fearful of?
Right. What most excites me about my research? I've been in, I'm in a fortunate position that I'm at a university, so I have a number of PhD students and master's students at the moment researching many different aspects of AI. So it was wonderful. I have a thought. I'm curious, and I get a PhD student to go and explore, I'm excited to. I think what's amazing about AI coaching is that you can very quickly, far easier than with human coaching research, you can discover things. You know, to get 100 human coaches to coach in a specific way and then measure the effect of that is very difficult and costly. But I can create an AI chatbot coach, and we can go off in a certain direction. So it's always been my dream, as before AI entered the fray, to be able to understand in which situations to use which coaching approach. And with AI, I think we're going to get to a position where that's possible. So what excites me about the research is the fact that I can do large scale randomized controlled trial longitudinal studies, which is very difficult in human coaching. And that'll give us hardcore evidence to show whether this is a thing to use or not. I'm really also excited by the fact that I want to use this evidence-based approach to only deploy things that I know as scientific merit to it. So to take the noise out of the system of and the hype out of the system. And I'm really excited about how it really can help people that I've not been exposed to coaching before. We did a study a few years ago with a master's student. Unfortunately, we only had 2 months to do data collection, which was not enough. And we looked at unemployment in South Africa. So South Africa is the highest unemployment in the world, 33%. And for youths, people under 34, it's more than 50% unemployment, right? It's terrible. And we gave Coach Vici, the chatbot, to a group of unemployed people, a large sample, 700, and they worked with it for 3 months. And we were tracking a number of measures, but the study was too short. And at the end of it, we could start seeing a trend of improved goal attainment and amongst other things. And imagine, and I want to repeat that study with a generative version of Coach Vici. Imagine I give that chatbot to an NGO for free, these millions of unemployed people. You know, some of the things were around how do I save money to get a driver's license? It's a very clear goal, and the chatbot would help them and nudge them and encourage them. So I'm so excited about how this could really help people that otherwise would not have the amazing benefits of coaching. That's what excites me. Most fearful? Sure. I'm not really fearful. I think it's the wrong word. I'm an optimist. I'm a technologist. I think I'm worried about hype being created around AI coaching, which cannot be delivered on because it's not evidence-based backed, so it gives coaching a bad name. I'm also worried about people calling things AI coaching that isn't AI coaching, that isn't coaching at all. And then I'm worried about the lack of regulation currently, and I'm fearful that the coaching bodies are not moving fast enough to help us regulate, but also not over-regulate, because there needs to be an element of innovation. So maybe from a research perspective, give us free rein to play around in an ethical way, and then bring that into the fray. I'm also worried about coaches not embracing AI. When I do this talk and I ask people on a scale of 1 to 5, how excited are you about AI? It's mostly positive, but there's always quite a few that are saying this is a seriously bad idea. And I think generally coaches are not technology oriented. That's my sense I'm getting. You want to work with a human connection, and because of that, you don't embrace technology. And I think it would be a pity because it could make you a better coach, more productive. But I'm also worried about a backlash where people become anti-AI and throw the baby out with the bathwater because they don't know enough, and maybe they're not open enough to the experience. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that.
Thank you for such a rich sharing of yourself today. It's been so eye-opening in so many ways. Okay.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you for your questions. It was such a wonderful reflective space. I feel I want to go write a book now.
Yeah, there's a book to be
Oh,
written from that. Yeah.
that's our intention, Nikki, like not for you to write the book, but to have the quality of conversation like this with people like yourself who are so plugged into the scene. And so I really do appreciate what you've shared today. It's been really eye-opening and stimulating for me. And thanks for playing in all the different spaces we took you. So actually, I do want to ask you, where can we find out more about your work? People, I'm sure, will be really curious about that.
The research is all published on ResearchGate. So ResearchGate is a website for academics. I can share the link with you.
We'll
But
put it to the show notes as well. Yeah.
okay. So if you type ResearchGate and my name, Nikki Terblanche, you'll get to my profile, and all the academic papers that are open access are there. Some of them, unfortunately, are you need access via university, but most of the coaching ones are open access. And then on LinkedIn, people can connect with me on LinkedIn, Nikki Terblanche. I publish all my announcements of latest research findings on there as well.
All right. Thanks so much, Nikki. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.